are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you to question your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Now, our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested in. If you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download any one of the shows, you go to the LA Talk Radio website. That's latalkradio.com, and you click at the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and you click the link. And this takes you directly to our archive page where you can view the list of all of our past guests. Now, our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section and Stitcher.com. You just type in Question Reality Radio, of course, in the search box. And if you want to find out about our future guests, see who are coming on until the end of the year, you can visit the official Question Reality website. That's a totally different website. That is QuestionRealityRadioShow.com. QuestionRealityRadioShow.com. And as always, we have a wonderful, fantastic, incredible guest. All of our guests are exciting and new. And her name is Catherine Natale. And I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, you are. You are. Yay. Congratulations.
Yay. I know that's a little hard one for me because it could be Natale, Natal. It could be any of those.
I get Natalie, I get Nat.
It can be pronounced several different ways. Now, Catherine is an actress, a producer, a writer. Her website, which I want you to go to right now and check it out, it's redneckweddingstv.com. redneckweddingstv.com, redneckweddingstv.com. You can also find her on YouTube under the same thing, which is Redneck Weddings TV. You can check out her clips on YouTube. She's also on Facebook under redneck-weddings-comedy and Twitter at Redneck Weddings. So I know you're thinking, what is Redneck Weddings? What is it about? Oh my God. Oh, ever since I saw Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, everything's redneck. So we're going to find out what that's about. Let me just tell you a little bit about Catherine. She's such a chipper little wonderful lady. I just can't wait for you guys to meet her. But basically, let me tell you a little bit about her career highlights. She worked on a lot of off-Broadway shows, and some of her career highlights include she was an actress in the movie Burlesque, starring Cher and Christine Aguilera. She was on the sitcom Hope and Faith, opposite Kelly Ripa. She can also be seen, and she's been in a ton of commercials, you name it, like V8. She's going to have to tell us all of it. I remember Burger King because I used to work at Burger King. I was forced to make my own money as a child. So I remember Burger King, and she's done a ton of commercials. She can also be seen in the upcoming movie Wheels, starring Christopher, I believe it's Hume, but it could be Hume, mm-hmm. again with the last name, from the movie Pirates of the Caribbean, starring my wonderful friend Johnny Depp. And this is a gritty comedy about two met. And it sounds like it's going to be very, very, very interesting and exciting. So I want her to tell us about that a little later. But right now, Catherine has decided to become her own little mogul. She's writing and producing from her company, which is Max Petals Productions. And she has developed her own TV pilot, which is, of course, Redneck Weddings. And this has apparently taken her 7 years to develop. My God, I'm currently working as a producer on a feature film, and it's taken her 6. So Catherine's got us beat by a year. And now these stories are taken from her own experiences working in a wedding chapel. So I'm sure she has a ton of stories, and this could be an endless sitcom. This could run longer than Frasier. So hopefully, fingers crossed that it will. And again, check it out. The website is redneckweddingstv.com. Now, Catherine, did I get all of that correct or what?
Yes, you did. You did get it all correct. It's
welcome.
Crazy because I started as an actress, and as a kid, I was going to acting school as a teenager to combat shyness. And then I was very creative, and my mother didn't know quite what to do with me because I was shy, and I was into art, and I was drawing, and I wasn't very social. And then all of a sudden, she takes me into acting school and gives me tap dancing lessons and whatever. And then this monster came out, like, 25 years later.
Hold on. We got, like, a whole hour. Let me just ask you some questions. My God, you just went right on ahead. You're excited to tell your story. We got to do this in order so people can get an idea what's going on with you, Catherine. Hold on, baby doll. Now, first of all, I always ask this question initially of the guests because people like to hear about what happens to people kind of in a path, like beginning, middle, and end. So to start out with, I always ask the question of when you were a little girl, what did you see yourself doing as a career? Like some people, I wanted to be Wonder Woman. Some people wanted to be a nurse. Some people wanted to, you know, be an astronaut. What exactly did you see yourself doing as a child?
I probably just drawing and being an artist because I could draw since I was 5 years old. In fact, I was very sophisticated in my drawing, so I would always was people were always amazed at what I could draw as a little girl, and so I think that would be my creative spirit was to draw, and you know, and so through my years I was drawing, I was going getting art scholarships and so forth. But then I found acting, and I realized that I could affect people, and I could, you know, suddenly be had my own little world on stage, and
that really lured me. Was this as a child you started acting, like in little school plays? Is that what ignited it?
Well, my mother was a performer, and so she would push me. She would say, sing, and I could sing, and I was like, no, I can't, you know. And so she would push me into, like, school plays and things, you know, that would be creative. And then she took me to tap dancing and so forth. And then I slowly but surely got out of my shell, and I ended up saying, you know what, I'll take acting classes. And I started it as a teenager going to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts on the weekends in Manhattan. And that was a big deal because I was a Jersey girl. And so I went to the academy, and I remember auditioning, and I'm shaking like a leaf, and I'm just totally scared. And I remember the artistic director there saying, you know, you have something. Okay, she's going to be enrolled. And that's what happened. And I enrolled in their summer program. And I guess it was a little gutsy, you know, trying to get out there and do what I was really scared of doing. And in high school, I was kind of failing in drama because I would get up and start talking and start to quiver and shake. And it, you know, so if anything, I want to inspire your listeners to say, hey, you can do it. You just need a little bit of chutzpah, guts, something to bring you to the forefront and discover your own will, you know, discover with your own passion.
Okay, so you started out working in a lot of off-Broadway shows and in New York. So mm-hmm. tell us what that experience was like as a beginning actor. Take us through the process. What do you have to do? Is it as scary as a lot of actors think that it is? Take us through what it entails, the pros, the cons, everything.
Well, I remember when I was 17 years old, I went to my first audition for a play in Manhattan. And I went there just totally blind. I had the script in my hand, but I had no picture and resume. And I remember the director saying, okay, do you have a picture and resume? And I was like, what's that? I mean, I just totally was not experienced. And he just laughed. And he listened to my reading. And then I went off my merry way. I didn't audition for another 2 or 3 more years. That's how scary it was. And so finally, I started joining theater groups. And I started getting more and more training. And I became more and more comfortable. And there was a little theater in the Village on 7th Avenue. And Austin Pendleton was doing a Neil Simon play. And I got involved in that. And I suddenly became, wow, this is great. And I actually started taking classes. And the more confident I got, the better. And I think it kind of gradually, people started to talk. You know, they started to say, hey, Catherine, it would be great for this part. And there were a lot of roles that I got just by word of mouth. Some of them I didn't even have to audition for. In fact, my first off-Broadway show where I got my equity card, one of the directors saw me in an off Broadway show. A couple months later, he called me and said, I want you for this role. And I was like, okay, do I have to audition? And he was like, no. So it was a gradual thing. But because I had a good reputation and because I delivered through the years, I was beginning to get that name out there. And I think as advice to your listeners, show up on time, be prepared, work with the director. Don't be like, oh, no, this can't be. I think that would be my advice, because the theater world is very cliquish and it's very small. And word gets around, it really, really does. And you really have to just go along with the flow and see where opportunities are. And comedy was always my forte. I mean, I'm quirky looking. I'm not the usual type, and comedy back east was my forte. Also, drama, too. You know, I had some artistic directors, cast me in some really dramatic, psychopathic roles that only I could play.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We all have that side.
So I think that's my advice, is to be prepared and to not be afraid to take on those small roles that could actually blossom into bigger roles once a company gets to know you. You have to start small, and then you end up getting bigger. And it's always, I love original works, and I did a lot of original works. Original works are fun because no one else has done it, and you have no way of knowing, sometimes with sequels of, plays have been going on for years and years. You have some, you can look on YouTube and figure out how that actor did it. But when original works, no one's done it. And you're the first to do that role. You're the first to actually discover and make it blossom and really become that instrument for that playwright. And that's really, to me, exciting. No.
It most certainly is. You're creating the character, and you could be the original and the best, or someone could come along and whip that part right away. Like I just saw Jewel in a small movie of the week. about the Johnny Cash story, and I thought, oh my God, I didn't even know Jewel acted. But I actually hate to say this, Reese Witherspoon, but I really loved Jewel's performance better than Reese Witherspoon. And plus, she was a singer, so she could sing the parts, I mean, with a real voice. But I actually, it was called Ring of Fire. It was on, I think, Lifetime, possibly. But it was fantastic. So just because someone else has done a role and really rocked it doesn't mean you can't come along and put your own stamp on it and make it even
better. Right. Two actors will always do something totally different.
They'll bring totally different aspects to the part, hopefully. Now, let's move on. So you went on from Broadway and you got some small roles. You got a small role in Burlesque, one of my favorite shows, starring Cher and Christina Aguilera. How did that happen and what was your experience?
Well, my manager, Maddie Webb, she's a terrific manager. I've been with her for several years. And I had that day, she emailed me. I almost missed her email. And I had swine flu. And I was really feeling awful. And I'm a stickler. If I have an audition, I will go. I would have to be in the hospital not to go. And I don't care how small the role is. I don't care if it's in the middle of a cornfield. I will be there. Because I feel that no matter where you are, if you're in front of that person auditioning, that is a good thing. Someone is looking at you, and that's what you want as an actor. And so I had swine flu, and I got this email. She says, oh, there's an audition. You have to be there. Can you be there at 3 o'clock, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, God, I feel so bad. This room is spinning. I'm like, and I said, okay. I text her. I said, okay. I said to my husband, you know what, Peter, you're going to have to drive me because I cannot, I'm just totally at, you know, feel really awful. So she gives me the script. It's one line, I have to say. She'll be back. And so I go down there and I'm looking around. I'm looking at everyone in the waiting room. And I'm saying, oh, God, I'm not going to get this. You know, but, you know, I'm in front of someone. It's a good thing. I feel like poop. I feel really bad, but that's okay. So I get in there. I have my Midwest, vest that I always wear. And I go in there, and I say it, and the casting director says, that was perfect. And I was like, okay, thank you. Sweating my bullets, really feeling awful. And I forgot about it. I just said, there is no way I'm going to get this. When I looked at the waiting room, there were like at least 30 people in the waiting room. There was just no way I was going to get this. But it's an audition. I'm in front of people. It's a good thing. So about 3 weeks later, she calls me. She says, oh, my God, Catherine, you got it. You got it. You got it. And I was like, oh, holy cow, I got it. I mean, I didn't expect it. And that's what happened. And it was a scene where Christina Aguilera actually walks past me. I'm on the bench with my friend, and she goes into the bus depot, and I say, oh, she'll be back. Well, when I got on set, they ended up deciding, we'll tape it, and then, you know, we don't know. We'll do it both ways, no line, with a line, whatever. And that's exactly what happened. And so they cut out that scene, but the director, Steve Austin, was really, really terrific. Anton, I'm sorry, was really terrific. He kept me in, and he credited both of us. And it was really nice of him to do that. And he was lovely, lovely to work with.
Oh, and, well, that was one of my favorite movies. I love that so much. It was a great movie. Now, you said that you got upgraded from an extra to a day performer by Steve Buscemi in a small independent film, Tree Lounge, and got to work with them. How did that happen, and what was that experience like?
Okay, that was in 1999. Well, I want to say 98, maybe. And it was out in Long Island, and I was an extra. And there you go. You know, you just don't know. You just don't know. You can be on a set and someone can say, that's the person. And you just don't know. And again, you have to be prepared. And I did a few scenes, and Steve Buscemi, you know, was doing his thing. It was his movie. It was a small independent movie, low budget. And they were getting ready for this truck scene where Baldwin actually smashes the truck. But they needed a lead-in to that scene where he starts an argument with, I forget who the girl was. And so he said to the first AD, look, we need a mom. And so the first AD and him lined all us up, all us extras, all us women moms that were playing in the playground, because it was in a park. And he went through every single one. He looked at me and he said, you. And I was like, huh? And he said, you're going to be the mom. And I was like, okay, fine, great. And I went with them. He says, I'm Steve Buscemi. I said, I know that. I'm a big fan, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he says to me, you improv, right? And I said, yeah, sure. Of course. And I had improv experience by that time. And so we did an improv, and it was great to do an improv with Steve Buscemi.
Wow. Yeah. That's exciting. Oh, yeah, he's one of my favorite actors. I just love him. Well, I'm so glad you brought across that point that you can be an extra, and next thing you know, you could be cast for, you know, out of hundreds. Same thing happened to me when I was auditioning at the LA Opera, and there was literally 100 people auditioning for this part, and I got chosen because I, believe it or not, I was I had been talking to the darn director in the elevator. I didn't know who it was. I didn't know he was the one that was casting it. We were just talking about him having glasses like John Lennon, because being from the East Coast, you know, we'll talk to anybody. We don't care who it is.
Right. We don't care. I know.
Yeah, so I'm talking to him in the elevator up to the audition room. We're walking along, and I said, oh, are you going to audition? He said, sort of. And then I said, and then I just went my way. He went his way. And then I just happened to be the one that he chose. I don't know if it's because of the conversation or because of the color shirt that I had on, because he said that that's the color that he wanted the gown to be. So you just never know. I mean, a lot of it does people have to do with luck. You should have talent, but it's when luck and opportunity and I think talent meet. So that's when you can.
Right.
Now,
exactly.
Let's talk about your new upcoming film, Wheels. It's a gritty comedy about two handicapped vets. What is that all about?
Well, it's a comedy drama. It's about two handicapped vets that have nothing to lose. And one guy wants to blow the other guy's brains out because they want to commit suicide, but neither one has the guts to do it because they really love each other. They were in the war and they really love each other. And so what they do is, in order for them to exist, because they've given up on life, they decide to rob people and to create havoc in L.A., and so it's kind of a comedy drama, and in the end, I haven't come out yet. I haven't really seen it yet, but I think in the end, he gets the chance to actually do a suicide thing on this other guy. But
Spoiler alert!
I know. I don't want to do that.
Don't tell everybody. You're going to get in trouble. You're going to be called by the producer and director, and they're going to yell at you big time. But that sounds like a very interesting story. I really like movies about vets and about because these are people that are protecting our lands and our sea.
Right.
So, my God, I hope it ends well. Don't tell us anymore. But it sounds really good. is it coming out? It's an independent film, so is it?
Sometime this year it's supposed to come out. I understand that they're working on the music, and it's going to be a blast. It's really going to be a big thing. So Christopher Hume is excellent. He's a great, great guy. I got a chance to work with him, and I played again a mom. And my kid is coming out of the car, and suddenly the two of them decide to steal my bag, and I end up beating the holy crap out of them. And it was a great little scene. It's really very comedic, even though they're in wheelchairs, and they decide that I'm going to beat the holy crap out of them, and there's no way that they're going to get away with it. So they start running after me, and I start running after them.
Oh, my God. That sounds fun. Now, you recently you recently decided, so you were acting, and then all of a sudden you decide that you want to write and produce your own show. And this is a, oh, wait a minute, we didn't talk about, didn't you just finish filming a documentary called Luck Be
yes.
a Lady? What is
yes.
that about?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Again, creating my own opportunity. I saw on an internet, because I have a show called Redneck Weddings, it's about a wedding chapel. And so creating my own opportunity, I was surfing online, and I saw that this guy, Kevin Silva, was doing a documentary. And that, you know, he was busy interviewing brides-to-be and people who actually went to wedding chapels to get married and their experience. And so I decided to approach him, and I said, you know, I have this comedy, this pilot. And by the way, I actually did work as a wedding consultant.
We are going to talk about that. We
yeah.
are. Don't give it away. Don't give it away.
No, we're no. And then what happened was he said, sure, I'm going to film you. Great. And so we had, I got a chance to actually talk about my experiences. And so that's coming out next year. It took him over a year and a half to get this together, but really nice guy, very nice guy. So,
and you also are going to be producing and co-starring in a new web series called All About Monos.
Yes.
Monos, or is it
yes.
Manos?
No, Monos. It means that, man in Greek.
Oh, okay. Ooh. is it a dark, and it's a dark comedy, and it was co-written with Ian Young, and you're going to start shooting
right.
this? What's it about?
It's about a woman who's very obsessed with a man who she went on one date with. And it's about two women who have a friendship since high school. And the one woman, you know, thinks that this was actually a relationship, but it wasn't. It was just one date. And this woman, my friend, Geraldine, is obsessed with this one guy who she really feels that it is her soulmate. And so it's her journey and my journey, and how we get together and end up in LA and as friends, and we get involved in a lot of different things. And we wrote a couple of scripts from it, and we want to shoot it in the fall, and it's going to be really, really, really fun to do. And she's really a really good comedian, and she's just done stand up and so forth, and we got a lot of good punchlines. And I'm a little raunchy, but I mean, you know, it's really about two women who are trying to find themselves.
Are you shooting here in LA or out of state?
Yeah. We'll be shooting in LA.
Now, are you in LA or are you out of state?
I'm in both. Right now I'm in Las Vegas, staying at my house. And then I'm also in LA too, so I'll be traveling back and forth.
Oh yeah, you just recently moved, right? Is that where you
yeah.
moved to LA?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
yeah,
that's crazy moving to LA. Oh, I mean, wait a minute, did you move to LA
Vegas.
Or Las Vegas? Oh, you moved to Las Vegas. Now, wait a minute, you said that you were a wedding planner. Was it in Las Vegas or another state?
It was actually, I had lived in Vegas for two years. And I actually started, I quit the business in a way. I said, okay, now I'm going to live a normal life. And so I ended up working at a wedding chapel that was haunted. And so what I did was, I had never written before. And I said, gee, this is really good material. There's just no way anyone's going to believe what went on here. So I started writing these little short stories. I get home and, you know, just wrote everything that happened that day. And then I tucked it away, and I was like, well, just a crazy idea, I don't know. And then what happened was, I started going to LA, and I started saying, okay, now I'm going to move to LA. And I started the acting thing again. And I said, okay, now I'm going to workshop it. And so I turned it into a play. But it didn't work out as a play. It was just too many characters going in and out, and it had no focus. I was just totally never wrote before. And that's why it took 7 years. Because I kept putting it back in the drawer, being very frustrated with it and not knowing what to do with it. And then someone said to me, look, Catherine, it's a feature film. And I was like, okay, but I've never written a screenplay before, so I have no idea what to do. So I put it back in the drawer. And then, you know, when these characters keep coming out in your mind and you keep thinking about it and you know that you have something, but you're trying to figure out what to do with it. And then suddenly I just took it out again. I started paring it down and I started writing and trying to figure out what the focus was. So the process of the writing was just, it was like almost like going to school for writing, but it took 7 years for me to get to that point.
Well, did you take writing classes or did you just wing it on your own? So how did you learn how to write the correct format and learn how to do?
Well, my husband is a writer and he's written screenplays and he's written a pilot and so forth. And I would have him read it and he would say, okay, you have no focus. You know, what's going on here? This doesn't make sense. And he said, do a better job at this. And he would never really give me ideas. I would just go through the process. And he helped me along with that. I used Final Draft as a program, which is great if you're a writer. It actually gets your characters together and you're able to keep track of each scene. So I used that. And then just a lot of printouts. I did tons and tons of printouts of the play and then of not knowing quite knowing what to do with it. And suddenly what happened was I ended up saying, okay, I have to think about this because the characters kept coming back to life in my mind. It was like I kept getting haunted by them, you know. So
now,
I said,
we're talking about, just to be clear, we're now talking about the Redneck Weddings. And let me just tell the listeners what the Redneck Weddings is about. She's talking about the Redneck Weddings, and this is about, and correct me if I'm wrong, about a young woman who is the kiss of death in her small town of Texas. And mm-hmm. every man who asks for her hand in marriage drops dead. And then out of her own struggle and her wish to have a big redneck wedding and find the love of her life, she travels to Cutler, Arkansas, and there she finds a job working in a wedding chapel called Wedding Drops. I love that. And this chapel is special because they promise everlasting love. So she lives and works with a bunch of these crazy, lovable characters. Is that the gist of what Redneck Weddings is about?
Yes, that's the gist of it. Yeah.
Great.
It's a crazy, it's a cross between the Beverly Hillbillies and the 1960s TV show and Arrested Development and Mad
now
TV.
You had said that this was, that you wrote this based on real characters in this wedding chapel that you work for. Is this true? All of these stories are true? Every one of them is true. And how long did you work there that you were able to gather this information to write this?
It was about 5 months working there 6 days a week and getting all these characters that would come into the chapel. And also the characters that actually worked there were crazy. I mean, and the chapel itself was haunted.
What?
And so,
how do you know it was haunted? How do you know
because,
that?
Because things would, like, candles would blow out when the ceremony was going on. Window shades would go up unexplainably. I would be working at night. I'd be in the front, and then all of a sudden, I would hear racket, like somebody moving shelves and things off the shelf. And I would say, "Hello, hello, no one's there." And then suddenly, I just went to someone who worked there, and I said, "I hear this kind of commotion in the back, and I know there's no one there. Is there a ghost here?" And they go, "Like, yeah, her name is Winnie." And
how do they know her name is Wendy? Wendy. Is it Wendy? Are they making it up?
Because Winnie was the original owner of the wedding chapel in 1942. Mm. And so one night I'm in the back and suddenly I look over and I see her in the kitchen cooking and there was a ghostly spirit effect that I saw.
Get out of here!
Like,
no! No way.
Yeah, it's like bizarre. Very bizarre. It's like so bizarre. But
are you sure you weren't on a hallucinogenic
no, no.
Come on.
No, no, I wasn't. And it was like, I looked and I said, that's Winnie. That's the other character. That's the character that, you know, is going to be part of whatever, this particular project that I'm trying to figure it out. So, yeah.
Hold on. Now, you see this supposed ghost cooking, and you stand there and watch her? You didn't run your ass out of there like a bat out of hell? You stood there and watched?
No.
What'd you do?
No, because... I mean, that's what you do. I mean, you're so intrigued and so bizarre.
Hell no. I would not be intrigued. I would be running my fat ass as far as I could get out of that kitchen. I'd be anorexic by now because I'd never go in another
kitchen.
So now
you know why, Priscilla. I had to write something about this chapel.
Oh, my God. So this chapel is in Vegas right now. This is an actual chapel that's still in operation.
Right, and I won't say what it is,
no,
who it is.
Because... Oh, God, no, I don't want to get sued. Okay, no. Yeah, for sure. Wow, okay, wow. Well, I know there are some crazy chapels in Vegas. I have heard some stories, but I've never heard the ghost story. So, oh, my God.
Yeah.
All right, so this is this right now, these stories, is it a web series, or is this going to be a short film or a feature film? Where are you taking these stories?
Well, I have a full-length pilot script, and I actually got it read, and everyone enjoyed it, and so after that, I decided to write some web series. So I have 6 web series scripts, and then I got into Kickstarter, and I tried to do the campaign for Kickstarter, and I failed miserably. I mean, I didn't get the money I wanted, and it had nothing to do with the project, just not enough people knew about it. So what happened was I said, okay, I failed. It was a little bit of, you know, okay, what do I do next? And
Catherine, hold on a minute. I want to touch upon that because that's a very important. I want to get your advice on that. Because there are a lot of actors that are putting their projects now on Kickstarter. And when you say you failed miserably to help, because you seem to be a very honest person with your mistakes, and I really appreciate that. I really don't like people who don't take accountability for their mistakes because, you know, they're just in denial. So what do you feel was the reason that that project failed on Kickstarter so that people listening know what not to do? What is it that you didn't do that that you didn't collect the money that you wanted?
Well, first off, I asked for too much. I asked for $10,000. You always want to ask for a lot lower than the amount you need. Secondly, I put too much in the description of it. I think people don't want to read a whole lot. They just wanted... People have ADD. They really do nowadays. Yeah. And instead of... I put too much. And I did it with all my heart and passion. I'm very passionate person.
And you also You also did it because you're from Jersey, because you know how people from Jersey can just talk and talk and talk.
I know. We talk and we just do our thing. I know.
We have diarrhea of the mouth. It's like I get the same.
Exactly.
So far you don't want to make the description too long. Just one paragraph is usually, you know, enough. And
maybe one or two, but I put in. I did it through the best of my heart. You know, I felt like, well, you know, and if you're passionate about a project, you want you don't want people to ask too many questions. Like, well, if I donate a dollar, what is this project? You want people to know what it is.
Okay.
And but maybe you do it a little too overboard, and maybe that's what I did. I also, a very important factor, I believe, is that I didn't start the campaign marketing-wise, social media, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, everything you can think of. I didn't start that until about a month prior to actually launching. I think that anyone who wants to be successful in Kickstarter must start it at least 8 months to 6 months prior to your launch date, because you need to have that going on for people to actually want to see more or want to see the page. And so it's because it was just basically me doing it, it was a lot harder. So you need a team. You need, like, you need to employ maybe 4 or 5 marketing geniuses, and you need to really start just diving in and aggressively getting that information out about your project.
Okay.
At least 6 to 8 months prior. So that's my tip. But I learned a lot. I did. I did learn a lot. And
So you feel that by advertising, if a person advertises their project, you know, 6 to 8 months before, when they put the Kickstarter up, so you don't think that that's overkill by doing it 6 months to 8 months? I'm being the devil's advocate. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just
right.
You know, you don't feel that 6 months, 8 months of just constant saturation is overkill, and then you put the Kickstarter page up, and then it's like they've already heard about it. Do they just say, oh, let me give some money to make, you know, make her go away? Because I've heard that myself. They're like, let me give you some money so you go away. And I'm like, okay, all right, I'll take it. Or do you feel that that's what's necessary?
I think that
advertising that far in advance is, you think that that's the better way, right?
Well, I think that there's so much competition. You have celebrities now using Kickstarter,
yeah,
and they have their brand, and they have their marketing people, and they have the funds to actually get their project up and running. So you have to compete with them. I mean, nowadays, you know, producers who have the connections or who can afford it are now using Kickstarter to do their own movies and their own.
I'm really torn on that, Catherine. I really am torn, because on the one hand, and I've heard both sides, I'm really torn on this, because on the one hand, I mean, it started out as a way for people, independent filmmakers, to get their films made by getting a whole bunch of people to help fund it. And that was a beautiful thing. And that was just a genius idea of whoever initially started it. But now celebrities are jumping on the bandwagon because, you know, when they do, if they do, these celebrities, they usually get their projects made through the studios. When the studio gets hold of your project, you lose control. You will lose all sorts of control. So the celebrities have decided, hey, that is a really great idea to get your fans, which they have millions of, to fund their films. Now, they could fund it themselves. God knows they have the money. They could just pay for it themselves,
right,
most of the projects. But they're saying, well, why should I have money come out of my own pockets when I can get my fans to fund it? And, of course, if you have fans, lots of fans, you're going to get your project funded, you would think. You would think there would be no problem. I have millions of fans. For example, Shamar Moore from Criminal Minds. He's doing, trying to fund one of his projects now. And you think, oh my God, he'll have no problem funding it. But if you look on Kickstarter or Indiegogo, I'm not sure, I think it's Kickstarter. If you look, he has millions of fans, yet he's got 3 weeks to go and he's not even close. And then you look at Zach Braff, and then you look at other
stuff. Right.
So you would think, oh my God, they were going to have no problem funding it. But they actually are. As a matter of fact, Sabrina, the teenage witch, Melissa Joan Hart, her campaign was a total bomb. It was all over Huffington Post. It was all over the internet. It was terrible. Why was it terrible? Not because of her. She's a wonderful girl, and she had a great idea, because she didn't have the team that she needed to advertise and promote and let people know what it's about,
right,
which is very, very important. But again, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to get all the money. Now, back to this split decision thing, which a lot of people are emailing me about how I feel. I feel like this. There's no way the celebrities are not going to advertise. The crowdfunding sites are not going to say to celebrities, well, you're banned from putting your projects on here. I think that in order to deal with it, you should think of it this way. Shamar Moore has his fans. Zach Braff has his fans. Every celebrity has their fans. Well, of course, they're going to fund because they're a fan. But that doesn't mean that they're taking anything away from you, because you have your little fan base, your family and friends. And, you know, just because somebody funds one thing doesn't mean they're not going to fund another.
Right.
There's some money
right.
to go around. So I think people should not be as paranoid, not be as upset as they are getting. There seems to be like a little coup d'etat going on now where they're ready to picket people, celebrities who are putting projects on Indiegogo and Kickstarter. So I think that there's room for everyone. So don't be too intimidated by that, because they have their fans and you have yours.
Exactly. So, and they do have their fans, but they also, there's a lot of competition. And
yeah.
So if you have like all, like, I guess Kickstarter probably has maybe hundreds of thousands of projects. And so it depends on what the person's, you know, tastes are, as you say, or what fan base they have. So if you're a little guy, such as me, and so that is the reason why I'm saying to start your campaign, your media, get into magazine articles, get into anything you can just to get the word out. And so the people have, oh yeah, I heard about that, you know. And so when you go back and you say, hey, check out this link of this Kickstarter campaign that I've now just launched, they will be more willing because they're used to it, they've heard about it, they feel that they know you, they, you know, things like that. And it does help. And you need a team. You definitely need a team.
Absolutely. So, absolutely,
yeah.
Catherine. You really do. You need to get someone, whether it's your husband or your kid or your best friend, but you need someone to be working Twitter, Facebook, all of the social media websites, and promoting. You got to do email blasts.
I know. It's a job.
It is a job in itself, yeah. And, you know, with you being, Catherine, with you being the writer, and I imagine you're going to act in it. We didn't even talk about that, but I imagine you're going to put a part for yourself in it and then producing it. That is overwhelming in itself. And then for you to have the business aspect, you really need to assign these things to someone that you can trust to really do follow through on that. So
definitely.
Well, personally, I would donate to your campaign to see some crazy ass wedding people rather than Shamar Moore's project or Zach Brown. I mean, I love that concept. I mean, I'm all about, I am a person who loves Here Comes Honey Boo Boo, so I'm all about the redneck shit. I'm all over it.
You know what? If this is the first, there's no scripted redneck show at all. I mean, my show's original.
There's a script. You're not saying it's improv, all improv, right?
No. My script is scripted. It's not a reality show like everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's original. It's original, and it's full of love. There's no I don't deflame anyone. I mean, it's about these characters have backgrounds. They have real people. They're real people. And it's just
like
the way it is.
It's not like you're stereotyping anyone or you're defaming anyone. These are real people, and you're just writing about the experiences that you witness. So they're out there. The people out there. So we got 2 minutes. I just wanted to make sure that we touch base on everything. I want to rerun the website so people can see clips of Redneck Wedding on YouTube under Redneck Weddings TV, right?
Or under my name, they can go to Catherine Natale.
N-A-T-A-L-A. Catherine, C-A-T-H-E-R-I-N-A-T-A. Oh, Lord, N-A-T-A-L-E. Woo! So they can type either one and it'll pull up. And then on YouTube, you've got little snippets of the shows, correct?
Yeah, and I wanted to say that I'm going to do a music video. Of the show. And right now, I've got a shopper's agreement with Panda Propaganda. Zach Longo, I think he's listening. He is going to start pitching the show. I'm going to be, just so that I have more and more content, I'm actually going to be putting together a music video. And it's a song by Rob Valley, who wrote a theme song for Redneck Weddings. It's a new original song, and I'm putting him in and so forth, and it's going to be a very catchy 1.5 minutes on YouTube. I will be doing it. Probably we'll get it done by next month. And it's me in it. I'm walking around with a wedding gown in the park, and I'm going crazy. And then I've got the scene from the actual pilot.
So it's going to be sung and written by Bob Valle, Bob Valle, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And oh my God!
He wrote it in 20 minutes. So
wow.
He was so inspired by what he saw that he said, you know, and he contacted me and he wrote the song. And I said, okay, now we need to do a music video. He was like, oh, cool. And so he actually got himself on camera and, you know, doing the banjo. And, you know, this show has country music. It has wedding. It has love. It has everything comedy. And it has a lot of different, it's really a heartfelt show.
Well,
and I wanted to convey that. So.
Oh, my God. Well, I'm so sorry. We're out of time. I'm so sorry, Catherine. But, we definitely want to see this music video. So please send us an email. Keep us actually involved in the Redneck Weddings process. I'd be more than happy to advertise that for you and let everybody know.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I appreciate
no problem.
That.
So thank you for coming on the show and telling us all about Redneck Weddings. I love it. Do you have any last words to your fans? Say goodbye. Say goodbye to your
audience. Everyone, thank you for your support and love. I appreciate it. And please tune in to redneckweddingstv.com. And believe me, you'll laugh your head off. Thank you, Priscilla.
God. You are so welcome. Thank you, everybody. Redneckweddingstv.com. Check it out on YouTube. It's funny as shit. Bye, Kat.
Bye.
Have a great week. Bye, everybody.
Yes, you too. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.